listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
December 8th, 2018. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs, where most, if not all, of the snow has melted. But it was quite cold, 22 degrees yesterday. Anyway, thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net. ScreeningSandyHook.net and WoolliesBlog.blogspot.com. During the program, email questions or comments to Spingola@Spingola.email. Please visit the chat room at Spingola.chatango.com. You may view the guest lineup at Spingola.com, where you will see the schedule all the way back to October of 2010. My first guest today is Daniel Estelin, and his website is english.danielestelin.com. The last name is spelled E-S-T-U-L-I-N, and he was with us before the midterm elections. Daniel, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. It's great to be on your show. I was choking on air as I was listening
to you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know how it feels to cough and
to choke on air.
Yeah, that's happened too.
At least I didn't forget to breathe.
Okay. I have trouble doing that. Because I've always been a mouth breather, and now I'm trying to learn to breathe through my nose, which is what you're supposed to do. And it's really the most difficult thing about breathing through your nose is when you're talking. If you've been a mouth breather, you breathe through your mouth automatically. So,
good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much. And I hope you.
It's great to be on your show again.
Oh, it's great to have you on the program. Okay, the midterms have occurred.
Gone, yeah.
I think that people in Illinois were hoping to get rid of the Madigan crowd, but they're still here, and I think that a lot of people are disappointed by the results. But what are your views? What's going
to
happen?
Well, I mean, it happened exactly what had to happen. What I don't understand, what is it that people expected? What were they expecting from the elections? I mean, in 2014, 2 years, it was last midterms, not these ones, but the 2014 midterms. I think I told you the story. We were at the Darsen conference in Dayton, Ohio, and we're sitting around in one of the sessions, or in between the sessions, with the American delegates and the European representatives. And Darsen's a very important conference. I mean, the heavyweights come to these places. It's a kind of a Bilderberg, but, you know, open. And, you have the politicians, you have the media, you have the, you know, high-ranking business officials and people from the intelligence community and, you know, big financial institutions, International Monetary Fund, World Bank. So we're sitting there. And, obviously everyone was talking about the midterm elections, and it was the day off of the day after the midterm elections. And the Republicans, of course, won. And, you know, and so we told them, me and a couple of other people from Russia, we told them that, you know, according to our calculations from a point of view of conceptual intelligence, we pretty much knew that no one on the liberal banking financier front, meaning the Clintons and all these other people, would ever be allowed to win the 2016 elections. And, we explained to them why, you know, according to how we saw it, it would either be Donald Trump, who at the time, it was like 7 or 8 months before Trump appeared on the scene, as a right conservative, or Bernie Sanders as a left liberal. had a good chance of winning the elections, or someone like, you know, Donald Trump, you know, that character, that kind of an individual who had, you know, strong business acumen and may not have known too much about politics. And this is exactly what had happened. And I always wondered, and I asked them, you know, cause they kind of looked at us funny. And I said to them, like, what did you people expect? Like, how do you see this thing playing itself out? So my question to the audience, I guess, is what is it that they expected from midterms this time around? I mean, they didn't really believe anything that you hear in the media about, you know, Trump being extremely unpopular. If anything, you know, you're seeing Clinton and her husband, Bill Clinton, doing their, you know, tour, and I'm in Toronto, Canada, and they did a show here, and it was an enormous fiasco. I mean, this is the arena, this is the place where the Toronto Maple Leafs, one of NHL's premier teams, historical teams, they play. And it's a 19,500-seat arena. And it's, you know, sold out, I think, like 20 years in advance. And these people, the Clintons, came in, and they barely sold 3,000 seats. And Marie Dodd, well, I mean, it was a big story in the New York Times. Is Marie Dodd, she's, you know, big-time New York Times journalist, member of the Bilderberger Inner Circle for many, many years. And she came and she paid she wrote about it. She paid $170 for a seat and the day of the concert, it was no concert, the day of the event, the tickets were selling for like $10 and $13 from $170.
Oh, I mean, that's my goodness.
90, exactly. And they, you know, they kind of, curtained off half of the arena, but still 19,500. I mean, Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know how big the arena is in Chicago, but I think it's probably pretty much the same size. So when you're looking at a 20,000 seat arena and only an eighth of it, a seventh of it is filled with people, you know what I mean? You kind of, they kind of heard you, everyone, all these people at the front, but there were pictures of what it looked like and it was pathetic. You know what I mean? And so I think, again, anybody thinking that Trump was just going to go away don't really understand. And I explained it in my book. And last time I was on your show, we talked about it. And actually, I got quite a few emails from people saying to me, wow, I never looked at it like that. I never thought about this amazing. I'm going to buy your book. And a few people haven't written and said, I will never, ever look at the things the way I've looked at them before. Because, again, people have to understand that Donald Trump, he's not a person. By that, I don't mean he's some extraterrestrial shapeshifter from, you know, God knows Alpha Centauri. I mean, there are some people going to be saying, hey, look what Esterlin is saying. Donald Trump is a project of one part of the global elite. Because, again, what we're seeing right now, and, again, we can talk about Trump, we can talk about the G20 meeting, we can talk about, you know, about the arrest of the chief financial officer of Huawei company in Vancouver, Canada. We can talk about the Yellow Jacket protests in France. I mean, but we can all label it the same. What we're seeing is a collapse of a global Bretton Woods financial model based on concept which simply doesn't exist. It's called infinite growth on a finite planet. And Donald Trump is simply the consequence of this generalized global collapse. And if anything, with the 2018 midterm elections, for the first time, you can say that the Republican Party is now firmly a Donald Trump party, because before it wasn't. I mean, Trump won the elections and the Republicans won. But again, what people have to understand that for the first time, maybe in history, it's not between the Republicans and Democrats. It's transversal, because remember, and I said it the last time I was on the show, that the Bushes, they voted for Clinton. And a lot of the people who are allegedly Republican, they voted for the Democratic agenda against Donald Trump. Why is that? Because what both parties, and not only in the United States, but globally, be it Canada, be it Europe, be it International Monetary Fund, be it World Bank, be it World Trade Organization, be it the NATO Alliance, be it G7, be it G20, all of these organizations and countries are allegedly the enemies of Donald Trump. Is Trump insane? Or does he know something which people should really understand and think about? Well, I don't know how much he knows. I'm not a mind reader, but I am an analyst. And what we do see is that the reason Trump is feuding with all these countries, which allegedly have been America's friends, you know, for generations, is because all of these countries globally, again, Canada, Europe, NATO Alliance, G7, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, et cetera, the Federal Reserve, they represent a liberal banking financier infinite growth Bretton Woods parasitical model based on concepts which simply do not go along with real economy. And the collapse of the entire system globally, and it's a global collapse, because you look at Wall Street and, you know, it's like 24,000. It goes up on day 200 points, then it goes down 700.
Right.
Goes up 300, it goes down 800. You know, what we're seeing is exactly what had happened in previous collapses, except that the Wall Street is going to go down about 90% as it did in the Great Depression. People don't understand it. They think that this thing is going to, you know, just roll over and we're going to go back into, you can't grow infinitely on a finite planet. And what had happened was, is between 1944 and 1991, there were two economic models. And they were very different and they competed against each other. In some cases, the Western capitalist model was better, which was created at the 1944 Bretton Woods Conference by the people who won World War II. Okay, the Soviets initially, they were members of the Bretton Woods, but Stalin never ratified, so he never signed the agreement. And then you have the Soviet socialist and their satellite model, which again worked between 1944 and 1991 when the Soviet Union or the socialist system merged with the Western system and created this global system. So the capitalist system between 1944 and 1991 had about 60% of the global economy, and the socialist bloc about 40%. And then what had happened in 1991, because they merged into one, you had an expansion of the territory under the control of the capitalist Western economies, meaning that the same socks, the same shoes, the same sneakers, the same, you know, iPhones and every other piece of trash, you know, which they sell us every single day of our lives, had, you know, found a new market. The socialist bloc, the Soviet Union, you know, Vietnam, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, et cetera, et cetera. But now these markets are full of the same garbage which we have in the West. And there's nowhere else to go unless you expand into states. And unless you expand, you know, into hell. And I'm sure there's lots of there. Who the hell
knows? I'm sure there are a lot of politicians down there.
Yeah, a lot of politicians, but they probably have, like, you know, the super duper pooper, you know, telephones, which they don't really, you know, 5 and 6 and 7G. So they don't, you know, Apple. One of the reasons that Apple is down like 20% and all these other fangs are going down is, you know, I've written it quite a lot on my Twitter feed, is somebody needs to explain, you know, whatever the guy's name, I think his name is Cook, okay, the president or the CEO, whatever he is of Apple, is that there's no such thing as infinite growth.
Right.
There's only so many gadgets every person on the planet can have before they run out of hands and space. And so what we're seeing right now is a generalized collapse globally in the entire world, because the same things that are happening in Canada and the United States are happening in Europe, are manifesting themselves in China. You think China is doing well? I mean, it's in the stage of collapse. There are cities built in China, you know, highways built in China to nowhere. There are cities, literally, they call them phantom cities, ghost cities, you know, built for 2, 3, 4, 10 million people, which you consider in China's 1.5 billion, it's not really all that big of a city, okay? And there's no one there. There's 100,000 kilometers, which is about 60,000 miles of roads in China. Well, just so you understand, it takes $1 million to maintain half a mile or half 1 kilometer of road annually on upkeep, because you need to repair the roads. So if you have 100,000 kilometers, because in Canada we have kilometers, we don't do miles, but it's about 60,000 miles. So for every kilometer, you need $1 million of, you know, to be able to fix the road annually. And if you have 100,000 kilometers, that's $100 billion somebody has to find to fix the roads. Otherwise, cars can't travel. And you start adding all this stuff up when nobody ever thinks about, and you realize what's actually is collapsing as a model. And again, Donald Trump came in as an alternative of an alternative group of elite circles, because whereas before you had on the supranational level above presidents and prime ministers, I hope your audience is sophisticated enough to realize that prime ministers and presidents, they're just figureheads for the people who run the world from behind the scenes. Because the Rothschilds said money like silence. So whether it's before the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds could basically, and others, and I'm saying these two because everybody knows their names, kind of sit down at this, you know, proverbial power table and decide who gets what. Now there is not enough for everyone. And so the Rockefellers lost in 2012 because what are the Rockefellers? They're bankers. You know, percentages. I give you a loan, I take a percentage. Whether the Rothschilds, they're changers of physical goods. Whether it's drugs, whether it's gold, whether it's silver, whether it's diamonds, physical stuff. And because the Rockefellers, which is the United States, which is the Illuminati, which is Skull and Bones, et cetera, call it the new Babylon project. Because they lost. The entire energy of the world is moving from Atlanticism to the Pacific region, which is, there's a reason why all the energy and all the corporations and all the new organizations and new treaties are being forged in the East. Okay? There's a reason for that. And so because the Rockefellers lost, the entire, you know, impetus is now going to the Pacific region. So again, going back to, you know, to my initial assessment, and this is what you get for asking such a complicated question.
It's okay.
Is the fact that again, Donald Trump won because what he had done is, he cleansed the Republican Party of all these parasitical Republicans who are not Republicans but rather Democrats, or who are not, I'm not even going to label them Republican or Democrats because it doesn't really matter. They're part of the global liberal banking financier model, okay? And that's global, and it's not between parties. It's global. And the alternative, just to give you an idea, the people behind, whether it's people behind Hillary Clinton in the last elections, and I say Clinton because she was the face of this group in the last elections. You had the Hollywood, you had Silicon Valley, intelligence agencies, mainstream media, Washington establishment, Wall Street, the Rockefellers, Soros. These are the people behind Hillary Clinton. And they lost, and that's why Trump is dismantling. He's dismantling Hollywood. He's dismantling Silicon Valley. He's dismantling the intelligence agencies. He's doing the same with Washington establishment. He's doing the same with Wall Street, you know, with the bureaucracy, you know, mainstream media, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And on the, behind Donald Trump, again, Trump is a project. You have your old European aristocracy, these are the people who have been landowners for 1,000 years. You had the Vatican. You had the city-state of Singapore and Hong Kong. You had the city, not London, but city, which is the epicenter of the British Empire. You have the Rothschilds, and you have the Queen of England. And why are these people behind Donald Trump? I'm not saying that Donald Trump works for the Queen of England. I'm not saying Donald Trump works for Vatican. Because these old money, because Trump is, again, half Scot, half German. Okay? They understand that if you have this generalized collapse, and we're very close to it, they will lose absolutely everything. So they need an alternative to the liberal banking financier order. And so, again, Trump is their representative because Trump today is not really the United States. Like, Trump is not equals America. America today still is under the control of the liberal banking financiers. These are people who control Wall Street. These are the speculators. These are the people who play with numbers on a computer. These are the people who don't produce anything at all. These are the parasitical elites, okay, who have this, you know, the entire edifice of the world economy since 1944, which is why you couldn't have an alternative project anywhere in the world. And I'm not talking about left or right, Republican and Democrat. Okay, this is a classic. When you divide, it's classic conjecture of the Western liberal elite. Divide, separate, get people into two camps, get them to fight each other. Okay? But that's all the same construct, the same liberal banking financier construct. So how did Trump become a possibility? Because beginning in 2008, with the collapse of the Lehman Brothers and the collapse of the world economy, it became possible to actually, for this alternative group, to present an alternative candidate to the traditional base of the liberal banking financiers.
Wow. All right. We will hold that thought. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. our first guest today is Daniel Eston, and he is the author of In the Shadows of a Presidency. Nixon had something to do with the Breton issue, because his actions also brought an end to the Breton.
Well, Brentwood's agreement, again, it was put together back in 1944 by the countries who won World War II. And Brentwood's is, you know, not to bore the audience with the economics terminology, is basically, you know, the expansion of America's territory, you know, with dollars as its key base element of that war, and which is one of the reasons why you had, Stalin renege on the agreement, and needless to say, the Soviets again have their own system, which is a socialist system, because again, the Bretton Woods system was an international treaty agreement for regulating world trade and also monetary and also financial stability, and it was decided at the Bretton Woods conference in the United States, when 44 nations sat down to basically decide how this whole thing is going to play itself out, and the core of the Bretton Woods system and the adopted International Monetary Fund Articles of Agreement of 1944 was the arrangement for fixed currency parities. In other words, exchange rates were to be changed in relation to the dollar or gold only as a measure of last resort, and only after national policy measures had been exhausted. And it worked fairly well up until, you know, the late 1960s. But then with the Vietnam War of the 1960s, it basically proved to be the undoing of the Bretton Woods system. By 1969, the American economy had fallen into major recession. And also at the same time, the amount of dollars circulating in the world increased significantly in comparison with the amount of gold that backed it. Whereas before, you know, $1 was backed by an ounce of gold. That was no longer the case beginning with, you know, the late 1960s. And so for this reason, foreign countries, and France had played a very important role in this, they started to actively swap their dollars for gold, thus depleting American reserves. Just to give you an idea, the reserves had contracted from 574 million ounces at the end of World War II to about half of that, 261 million ounces by 1971. So, you know, in 1970, the Nixon administration and also the Federal Reserve had eased monetary policy to lower interest rates and stimulate domestic growth. So international currency speculators, what did they do? What they always do. They reacted immediately with a major attack on the dollar. And by 1971, as the U.S. recession worsened and Nixon faced a hard reelection campaign, inflation and easy money from the Federal Reserve were stepped up under the political pressure from the White House. And then, of course, on August 15, 1971, Nixon got rid of what remained of the gold standard. And most people don't really understand it, and the economists in the West, they kind of like to gloss over this thing. But it was one of the most important events in American history, alongside with the collapse of the stock market in 1929, Kennedy's assassination, and also 9/11. And so the stage was set to go from the system of fixed exchange rates that gave an advantage to real productive development and investment. And after 1971, everything went in favor of the speculators. So just to give you an idea, in 1938-39, speculators, the financiers, the people who control today 70% of the world economy, they're behind the liberal banking order and Hillary Clinton, et cetera, et cetera. They control about 5% of the economy. Okay, or their part was 5%. Today it's 70% of the real economy, only contributing about 30%. And so the problem with all of that is when you're looking at the economy, there's two ways. And again, we're not going to get into it, you know, the difficult monetary terminology, because people are going to get bored and start watching, you know, curling on television.
I don't think so.
Or just go to sleep. But the point is that There are two ways you can make things work. One is an open system, another one is a closed system. What does an open system mean? It means that when you don't have something, you steal it from somebody else. That's what the British Empire has done historically. That's what the Spaniards have done by stealing and bringing everything, you know, from the Americans after the discovery of Americans in 1492. And the Americans, the United States have done this, you know, the barrel of the gun, bringing democracy to every nook and corner of the galaxy, you know, under the guise of the color revolutions. But the point is that there's a limit to that model, okay? And we've come to the limit because there's nowhere else, you know, you can't steal from anywhere else. They've dismantled all the country, dismantled all the system. The economic system is this huge $4 quadrillion bubble. And so once they realized, you know, there's no more countries to steal from because they've expanded their control from the capitalist West to the Soviet or socialist East, and now they control the entire planet. And now that they have come to the limits of growth to that extent, that's when you have the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers looking for ways to steal whatever they can from wherever they can. But there's a limit to that because, again, in the United States annually, people spend $3 trillion more than they actually make. So the point is that with these numbers, you can't make the economy work. It's simply not possible. So Trump has a problem.
Yeah, a really big
one. After the break, Joe, we can talk about that.
Okay, we'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Daniel Estulin, and his website is english.danielestulin.com. Okay, so they've run out of markets, and this gold, even after World War I, America exported a bunch of gold, or I think it was even before, maybe in 1916, they were shipping off gold in order to further warfare. So it's something that's definitely not new.
Well, the problem is, again, it's, you need markets, and there's simply nowhere else to go. I mean, the markets are saturated. Because planet Earth, what economists in the West don't seem to understand, or some of them do, but most of them don't, is something that Marx and Adam Smith realized 200 years ago, that planet Earth is a globe with limited, you know, finite space.
Right.
And when you come to the end of that space, there was nowhere else to go. And we've come to that, which is one of the reasons, again, in the Soviet Union, we studied polit economics. Politics and economics. And in the West, in the capitalist system, the Western economists, they realize that, you know, Marxist theory, which is really not a theory because, you know, we're seeing the consequences of that, you know, they weren't happy with that because you can't have limits to growth in the capitalist system. They want infinite growth. So they got rid of the whole polit thing and they just created an economics. And one of the problems you have today is that in the West, nobody has the language to explain what's going on. By language, I don't mean English or Spanish or Chinese or Russian. I mean the language of the economy to explain what is happening, which is why, again, you listen to the politicians, you listen to the business leaders, you listen to the economists, you listen to the money people, and for the, you know, exception of one here or one there, generally speaking, globally, none of them understand or can explain a concept that we have reached the limits to growth, because you can't expand beyond what we're seeing right now. So when you're listening to the president of Apple or the people from, you know, from any of these other large corporations talking about, you know, this is just a, you know, a temporary measure that things are going to get back to normal in a few months, they don't understand that planet Earth has 8 billion people, not 80 or 800 billion people, and it doesn't, you know, expand exponentially. It's what it is. And there is nowhere else to go. It's like, I'll give you a simpler example if people understand. Imagine you have an island. Okay, and on this island, there's 200 houses. And you own this big property. You can start buying up everybody else's houses. Okay, and you have shareholders and you know, give them dividends and they're very happy because they're making money. But then there comes a point where you end up with 200 houses on the island. You buy everything up. You have all the land. You have all the stock. And the shareholders expect you to grow, but you can't because you have reached the limits on the island and you can't grow anymore. Unless you create a new economic model. So the problem in the world today, and that's one of the reasons why Trump came in, okay, as a project, not as a person, is to try to come up, not Trump, but the people behind Trump, with an alternative economic model based on something different than this liberal banking financier models. Because again, economically speaking, if you go back to the 19th century, there were four economic models. You had the British, you had the German after the war with France in 1870, you had the American at the end of the 19th century, and then you had the Japanese after the war with Tsarist Russia in 1904, 1905, which was really a continuation of the of Japanese Meiji model from 1868. Then after the World War II, you had two models. You had a capitalist and socialist bloc. Then in 1991, you had one model, because everybody merged into this one global union. And now you don't have a model because you can't grow. You can only collapse. And so the problem today went from 4 to 2 to 1 to 0. You need to come up with a model. Because if you don't have a model, the economy and everything collapses. Which is one of the reasons we're seeing tensions all over the world. Because the people, let's call them the planners. You call them the cabal, whatever you want to call them, the above presidents and prime ministers, they understand that there are so many ways you can come out of this alive. And one of the ways is global third world war, which most likely will be thermonuclear war. And why is war good for them? Because wars write out debts and responsibilities. You know, so because you have this global $4 quadrillion bubble, and you can't write off $4 quadrillion. And in that, in this case, you know, the globalists, they love the Middle East, because you have Israel and the Jews on the one side and Arabs and oil on the other. I mean, you can't think of a better combination. Do you know what I mean? That, or God has a very strange sense of humor. But the point is, it doesn't matter where you look. Everybody's pointing to this global war, because again, they don't need a small regional shooting war between the Hutus and the Tutsis. They need a global conflict that'll clear the chessboard, proverbial chessboard, and you can start fresh, which means you reorganize the economy. Yes, 4 billion people will die. But tell me, when did that concern the globalists? Right. Why do you think the billionaires are spending $100 million on building underground bunkers? I mean, if you had $100 million, would you build a bunker so you could live like a rat underground? Or would you buy yourself an island somewhere in the Caribbean, you know, or the Seychelles Islands? You have your drinky pool, looking at the sunset, you know, swim in the ocean. What would you rather do? So if these people are buying $100 million bunkers, maybe they know something which we, the herd, may not quite understand. Again, I'm going by open source information. We don't need to go into the secret documents, private information, because people don't have access to that. But people do believe what they read. So when you see billionaires building $100 million bunkers, maybe someone should ask themselves why. And as Mao Zedong said long ago, he said, if there's a global war and they kill half of the world's population, the other half will survive, and our country is 1 billion people strong. Now it's 1.5 billion. So the Chinese will survive. We, Russia, will survive because population-wise we're small, 120 million. Okay, but land-wise we're very large. So right. Again, and the elite circles, they'll just reorganize the world economy on a much smaller scale. So that's one of the ways to get out of this. Another way, and this has been, you know, actually going on behind the scenes since shortly after 9/11 on September 11, 2001. Because again, the capitalist West, they, in 1991, once the Soviet system merged with the West, they said, hooray, we won the war. But their, you know, triumph only lasted about a decade. Because in the year 2000, if you recall, we had the dot-com bubble. Then in 2008, we had the Lehman Brothers. Then in 2011, we had the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, the president of the International Monetary Fund. I think I explained it the last
time. Yes.
Okay. Then in 2012, Obama won the re-election. In 2014, he stopped quantitative easing. He stopped printing money. And then in 2016, you had Donald Trump and Brexit. Okay. So again, the elite bankers, the elite money people, they understood that their model was dead. And so since about September, October, November, about you know, since the beginning of the 21st century, they've been looking at alternative models to the liberal banking financier model. And there are several ideas, you know, that are being kicked around, but there's nothing concrete, because to come up with a new Bretton Woods or new Yalta agreement from, you know, 1945, when Churchill, Stalin and Roosevelt got together and, you know, redrew the world after World War II. It takes time. It takes years, and we don't have years. The economy is about to collapse. It may be 3 months. It may be 6 months. But if you look at the cover of the Economist magazine, you know, they do their pictogram issue where they, you know, say the world in 2018, the world in 2019. Well, last year was quite, you know, fun. And this year it's just black cover of The Economist, and you have the year 2019. It's the end of the cycle. We are going to hell. And The Economist is owned by the Rothschilds. And behind the Rothschilds are the Kabbalists. So what you're seeing is people at a very high supranational level explaining through signs and symbols what's about to come. And so the solutions, okay, which these people have been looking at. One is regionalization of world economies. What does that mean? It means you dismantle countries. If you go back historically, let's call the first period Global 1.0, between 1648, that's when the Westphalia Agreement was signed, to about the late 1960s of the 20th century. Okay, so Global 1.0, you have countries, nation states, constitutions, currencies, borders, et cetera, et cetera. And then in 1968, these people got together at the Bilderberg Conference on the outskirts of Montreal in this place called Mont Tremblant, which is a great skiing resort that people like skiing. And they came up with this global 2.0 called One World Company Limited. In other words, corporations that have a lot more power than any government on the planet. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we saw that because you have Goldman Sachs, and, you know, have a lot more power than most governments on the planet. And then right now we're in global 3.0, that's post-industrial. Okay, the world of networking. Post-industrial, it's not about industry because, again, growth and development is directly proportional to population density. But because we reached the limits of growth, that model is now collapsing. So what we're seeing right now is dismantling of countries of this global 1.0 and creation of regional economic blocks. For a regional economic block to work, you need a population base between 300 and 500 million people. See, there's a reason, like, again, if you kind of look at the things around you, you don't have to go very far. There, you have to ask yourself, why is California trying to secede from the United States? Why is somebody trying, you know, to buy Baja California, that's Mexican's part of California, for $200 billion and, you know, merge it with California and create this, you know, whatever country, they will, however they want to name it? There's a reason why there's over 60 independence movements in Europe right now, whether it's northern Spain and Catalonia, Lombardy and Italy, whether it's Scotland, whether it's, you know, ex-Yugoslavia. Because, again, look at Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia used to be a nation state, meaning a country, okay, comprised of seven provinces. Now it's seven different countries. The Soviet Union used to be a country with 15 republics. Now it's 15 different countries, okay? And each one speaks its own language. Obviously, everyone speaks Russian. But, you know, we're looking at dismantling of countries. Sudan used to be one country. Now it's two, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we're seeing right now is an intent to dismantle countries and create regional economic blocks. And that would be, for example, I explain it in detail in my book, would be Canada, United States, parts of Mexico, Australia, New Zealand. That would be one regional economic block with dollar as its currency. And every block would have its own currency. Then you have the rest of Mexico and Latin America. That would be peso, whatever you want to call it. China, because of its, you know, size and strength, would be a separate entity. India would be a separate entity. Russia would be divided by two, you know, by the Urals, traditionally, you know, geographically speaking, with Western Russia joining former Soviet, Turkic-speaking republics, Turkey, Iran, Syria, you know, the Balkans, and then Orient Russia, far east would join with the Koreas and maybe Japan, because if Japan joined China, you know, Japanese culture would disappear. Okay, because of the population size, and also historically speaking, these two could never get along. And then that would be, you know, you'd have the European axis, a Paris-Berlin axis, okay? And there, that would join with, France's, African colonies, because that's where you have the natural resources. And that would leave England and the Arab world after Brexit. What we're seeing right now, which is one of the things I've said a long time ago, as soon as I saw the, you know, the yellow jackets out in, you know, streets of Paris and France, this is the same manifestation. We're talking about color revolutions. These are all Masonic, because again, when you're looking at color, they call them orange. Where does it come from? From William of Orange, which is a Masonic revolution. And all of these color revolutions globally, again, if you understand signs and symbols on a supranational conceptual level, you have to understand who is running these things. And what you're seeing in France is, because again, Macron, the president of France, he, for years and years and years, he worked for the Rothschilds. He's a banker. And the Rothschilds are the bankers of the British Empire. So really, if you think about it, you have Macron working for the British Empire. I'm not saying he works for Theresa May, the Prime Minister of England, who's a nobody. Just like Hillary Clinton is a nobody, like Macron is a nobody. But the point is that all these movements globally are being run by somebody behind the scenes. And what we're seeing right now in France, because again, England, they need markets after Brexit because Europe is going to be closed to them. And so the plan was to bring Macron in as president of France, break up, because Macron, and I explained it in my book, we don't really have a lot of time to go into this, but Macron is a carbon copy of Napoleon III. Mm-hmm. People know history, or they're interested in history. You know, there's, again, you have to understand how the elite think globally. And so the whole idea of Macron is to separate the Paris-Berlin axis, push Germany, which is national socialism, into the hands of China, because China is also national socialism. Socialism with the Chinese specific, which is basically a union of different clans around the throne of its ancestors. And so the idea is you open the markets by separating France and Germany and pushing Germany away into the hands of China, and you open European markets. That's one of the solutions. Okay, and for that to work, well, actually, that was the second part of the plan. The first part of the plan was that London was going to create with the Arab countries its own regional economy, its own bloc. But how do you unite the Sunnis and the Shiites and all these different divisions within the Arab world who hate each other and hated each other since, you know, Prophet Muhammad was still in, you know, diapers? How do you unite these people and countries, you know, with London? There's one way you could do that, by making sure Israel disappears as a country. Okay? And there's a reason why Henry Kissinger and Jacob Rothschild in 2012, Henry Kissinger said, in an interview in the New York Post, he said that Israel in 10 years is going to disappear. I'm not saying this. Henry Kissinger said this. Somebody who's well acquainted with how things work behind the scenes. And the same for Jacob Rothschild. And people, if you don't believe me, you can check it online. Okay? And so the whole point, people are saying this is a conspiracy theory. It's not. The whole point is the only way you can actually merge the Arab world together is by offering them something, you know, in exchange, and not in exchange, but Israel's head on a platter. And the whole thing was worked out, and what was missing is for Hillary Clinton, who hates Israel, what was missing is for her to become president of the United States. But she lost, and Donald Trump came in, and so the elite in London needed Plan B, and Plan B was Macron, and I explained who and why. And these are the shenanigans behind the scenes, which we're not seeing, but we are seeing because it's right there, front and center. Paris is burning, okay, they're dismantling, destroying the country, and there are these yellow vests all over the country, sprouting like wildflowers, and nobody's asking from a conceptual point of view what is really going on, because again, geopolitics has very little to do with what we're seeing globally, because it's not white and black. It's on a conceptual level where we have to ask the questions. And the question conceptually is, what reason, why is all of this going on?
Right. There's a gentleman, David Rubin, who wrote Trump and the Jews. And Trump has really done quite a lot of things beneficial to Israel. Anyway, we do have a break. We don't have a break. We do. Okay, we'll be right back. All right. everybody. We are back. And our first guest today has been Daniel Estlin. And his website is english.danielestlin.com. We have about 3 minutes.
Well, my Twitter feed is also at @estulindaniel. That's where people can find me if I'm anywhere online. It's at @estulindaniel on my Twitter. Again, it's important to understand that what we're seeing right now has very little to do with the media is writing about. First of all, because most of them don't really understand what's going on, because they're still using the old constructs, which no longer work. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, imagine you have a group of people who for a very long time have all been speaking Esperanto. And suddenly, you know, you wake up one morning and you realize that, you know, nobody talks that language anymore. Okay? And you have a hard time, you know, coming to grips with that. And you try to explain everything based on Esperanto and it no longer works. And this is what we're seeing right now globally. So all this stuff happening globally, you have to understand the backdrop to everything is a collapse of the economic model based on a fictitious concept of infinite growth. So that's dead. You have alternatives, we do. We just have to figure out conceptually where we as planet Earth are going in the near future, because I don't know if there is, you know, the distant future, because again, short term, we need to come up with a new model. And that's what everybody is looking at and working towards. And all this fight between the Chinese and the Americans, it's not really a fight, because there's an agreement signed back in the 1970s between Jimmy Carter and Deng Xiaoping was for 20 years plus another two plus another 20. I explained the last time I was on the show.
Yeah.
And no intervention, no hot war. And so all the stuff you're seeing right now is just, again, Americans are going to shut the door on the United States and make America great again within the confines of the United States, as long as they can figure out what to do with their economy. And the Chinese are going to their area of influence with the Rothschilds in tow, because again, China is not China. China is China and the Rothschilds, who actually have deposited 30,000 metric tons of gold in China as a compensation for what was done to China back in the mid-1800s, you know, with the first and the second opium wars.
Right.
So again, a lot is going on globally. I hope people read my book, In the Shadows of the Presidency. It's unlike any other book, which, you know, talks about all the trivial stuff. You know, Donald Trump picking his nose at dinner parties and talking nonsense and peeing in somebody's bed in Moscow, which I don't think you should do. You know, that's the case. Please don't do it again. But again, it's absolutely irrelevant to the future. It is totally irrelevant whether he's a good guy, bad guy, whether he's, you know, a racist, a sexist, a misogynist. It doesn't matter, because it has nothing to do with the fact that the global economy is in shambles and it's on the verge of collapse. Or we come up with a new model or we go to hell. It's really that simple.
Right. Well, thanks for cheering us up.
Anytime. So if you want some more cheering, just let me know and I'll be more than happy to come back on the show and talk and talk and talk and talk.
Well, thank you so much. And I appreciate your thoughts and your book is wonderful. It really did open some ideas to me and has a lot of, it's very succinct, very well written. And you are, after all, an international bestseller. With your this true story of the Bilderberg Group.
Well, also remember, people who are wondering who is this guy, I spent 24 years in military counterintelligence.
Right.
You know, at a very high level, I work for Joint Chiefs of Staff for different countries. I consult presidents of countries. So I do understand something.
Exactly. All righty. Well, thank you again so much.
Thanks so much for having me on the show. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.